President Donald Trump is nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by a Norwegian official. A global athletes union wants Iran kicked out of global sports. U.S. troops are being cut in Iraq. And Sudan gets an incredible September surprise. All of this and much more on this week's edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. And welcome to this Thursday, September 10th, 2020 edition of World News Brief, where we bring you a wrap-up of the week's most impactful and important news stories from around the globe. I am your host, Winston R. Holland, thrilled to be with you as always. And yes, if you've been following the show, I am now back to a weekly show. I tested the waters a bit on a daily show for a couple of weeks, and I found out it didn't take too long, but I kept going, even though it is hard to kick against the goads. I kept going, and I found out that it did not work out for a number of reasons, and I won't bore you with all of them, but one of the reasons that is relevant to, I think, every listener of this show is that I'm not only the host of World News Brief and also a host for a show that's going to be coming back, but I also run the CGMRadio.com network, and doing a daily show is making it difficult to run the network and build this network, which takes time, energy, mental capital that I then can't put towards World News Brief. But you know, those the other shows on the network, such as the Bob Siegel Show, JP's Political Matrix, working on just getting those going and promoted and letting the world know about them, as well as other shows that we will be launching very soon. So I simply could not devote time to a daily show and the network. So we are going back. We are going back to a weekly show, which is a wrap-up of the week's most important news. And that's actually typically going to be on Friday, but I have to do it today on Thursday because I have other things that get in the way of me doing the show tomorrow. So mostly Fridays, maybe occasionally Thursdays. Expect World News Brief for the foreseeable future. But hey, I set up a pretty good template for a daily show, and at some time in the future, when life gives me that opportunity, or perhaps I should say more specifically, God gives me the opportunity, I will be ready to rock. Also, remember that CGMRadio.com has now become a news aggregation site. You can not only find all of the articles and videos discussed in my show, the Bob Siegel Show, or JP's Political Matrix, or any of the other shows there on the front page, but it's just a general source of news as well. So be sure to check that out daily. It's going to be updated most days with what we think, at least, is the most important and relevant news. And I wanted to mention an episode of the Bob Siegel Show you will not want to miss. There's it's linked there on CGMRadio.com. There's a big picture of Bob and Dr. Robert Price. So, as you may know, Bob Siegel's a Christian apologist. Dr. Robert Price is an atheist, and they have a conversation on the Bob Siegel Monday show. However, you would think a Christian apologist and an atheist scholar getting together would result in a debate. However, that is not quite the case. They're actually not debating, they're coming together in solidarity over, yes, I know I'm mean. Yes, I know I'm evil. However, you're going to have to go to CGMRadio.com to see what that is. CGMRadio.com/Bob to subscribe. But you'll want to check out that interview in the current climate. Here you have a Christian apologist and an atheist, Bible scholar, believe it or not, coming together in solidarity, given the, I'll just give a hint, cancel culture. So be sure to check that out, as well as CGMRadio.com, again, for latest news updates. Also, after we hit the headlines, we're going to take a deep dive into how Trump can enforce the full snapback of UN sanctions on Iran. If you've been following this show, you know that we've been following this closely. I believe that Iran, perhaps outside of China, in maybe Russia represents some of the biggest threats to freedom and security in the world, and it's very important that Iran is put in its place and it's defeated. It's very important that that regime is toppled, because until that regime is toppled, it is going to be continue to be a menace in the Middle East and throughout the rest of the world, and along with only helping China. Iran only helps China, which is the greatest threat to U.S. freedom and security right now. And so what can the Trump administration do to snap back, to bring back all of the sanctions on Iran, the crippling sanctions? Iran was being crippled. The Ayatollahs were being crippled until the Obama administration came in and rescued the greatest state sponsor of terror in the Middle East. What can the Trump administration do to actually enforce the snapback of all of those sanctions when all the other countries except for the Dominican Republic that are on the UN in Security Council, they don't want. They want to continue with the Iran nuclear deal disaster. What can we do? So stay tuned for that. Also, the quote of this week is about Lebanon from President Ronald Reagan himself. That will absolutely shock you when you compare Lebanon now to then. To stay tuned for that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's hit the headlines. America First, Fox News, Trump nominated for Nobel Peace Prize by Norwegian official, citing Israel-UAE peace deal. Just weeks after helping to broker peace between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, President Trump has been nominated for the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize. The nomination, submitted by Christian Tybring Gjedde, a member of the Norwegian Parliament, lauded Trump for his efforts toward resolving protracted conflicts worldwide. Quote, "For his merit, I think he has done more trying to create peace between nations than most other Peace Prize nominees," Tybring Gjedde, a four-term member of parliament who also serves as chairman of the Norwegian delegation to the NATO Parliamentary Assembly. Boy, that's a mouthful, told Fox News in an exclusive interview. Tybring Gjedde, in his nomination letter to the Nobel Committee, said the Trump administration has played a key role in the establishment of relations between Israel and the UAE. Quote, "As it is expected, other Middle Eastern countries will follow in the footsteps of the UAE. This agreement could be a game changer that will turn the Middle East into a region of cooperation and prosperity," he wrote. The guy gets it. This is just the beginning. We've already seen Kosovo and Serbia jumping on board. We've already seen Mawali is jumping on board. We've already seen Saudi Arabia open up airspace to the Israelis, which has never been done before, for that historic flight and for future flights from Israel to the UAE. And as Ben Shapiro noted, and I think he might be right about this, is that he thinks Saudi Arabia might normalize relations with Israel as well after Trump is reelected. Wouldn't that be incredible? The home of Sunni Islam, which views, obviously, the Jews as a stain and as a diabolical evil in and of itself, that it is an inherent evil. Jewishness is just simply, it's like Satan's ethnicity, according to hardcore Islam, right? So this is truly incredible. This is truly transformative, and I this interview right here is a couple minutes long. It's a Sky News Australia. It's an incredible exchange between Sky News host Rowan Dean and his guests, talking about how Trump really is the only president in history to deserve the Nobel Prize nomination. Check this out.
Talking about Donald Trump.
Yes.
Someone's actually in the Norwegian Parliament just announced that they've nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize for the deal that he brokered between Israel and the UAE, the United Arab Emirate. But he's also been attacked now in America for attacking, allegedly saying that soldiers who died in war were the losers. No, and no one's actually named a single person who actually heard him say that. And Trump this week said that, well, in fact, the only soldiers that hated him were generals. Here he is.
I'm not saying the military is in love with me. The soldiers are. The top people in the Pentagon probably aren't, because they want to do nothing but fight wars so that all of those wonderful companies that make the bombs and make the planes and make everything else stay happy.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here. The interview continues, but wow. To hear a president call out by name the military industrial complex and say, essentially, look, the only soldiers that don't like me are the generals who are in cahoots with the military industrial complex, who want to keep the war machine going so the companies that make our weapons and our aircraft and so forth can continue to make billions of dollars. The president of the United States is calling that out, following in the footsteps of Republican Dwight D. Eisenhower, who originally called out the military industrial complex. Other presidents perhaps may have. I'm not aware if they have. I'm not saying they're the only two, but wow, this has been needed for a long, long, long time. You know it. I know it. At this point in American history, we are absolutely, we're tired. We're tired of sending our sons and daughters to foreign lands to fight unwinnable wars in regions that do not share our values, that do not hold the ideals of freedom and personal liberty. And we're going to send our sons and daughters there to die to try to build a Jeffersonian, Madisonian republics. I'm sorry, it's not our job to do that. It is our job to pray. It's our job to pray for those countries, but it is not our job to go with the blood of our sons and daughters to try to transform the world in our image. No. Hell no.
Rowan, that was such surprising peacenik talk that I actually checked. Do you know Donald Trump is the only American president since Jimmy Carter nearly 40 years ago who has not ordered U.S. troops into a fresh war?
Amazing.
Even
it's
Obama
true.
Started a war in Libya. He's a real peacenik, a deserving winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. So why does the left hate his guts with all this hippie talk about the military-industrial complex?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? It was Dwight D. Eisenhower who first kind of belled the cat on the so-called military-industrial complex, and this was the idea that there were these powerful forces, arms dealers, arms manufacturers, and so on, who kept pushing subsequent administrations in America into whatever war they could find to make profits. And the left has always railed against the military-industrial complex. It was a great theme in the 60s. That the Republicans were the baddies and the Democrats were the goodies. But we saw it didn't matter whether it was Democrat or Republican presidents, that one after another went to war for whatever reason. Donald Trump, as you say, is the only president not only to not go to war, but to actually deserve his nomination for the Nobel Peace Prize. It is Christian Tybring Gjedde. Of the Norwegian Parliament, a conservative parliamentarian who today nominated Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. He was almost going to be nominated last year for his work with Kim Jong-un and the fact that very much a conflict with North Korea, had the threat of it had subsided, but he's been nominated now, and the left cannot stand it. This is a great president, and it's yet another reason he deserves to win in
November. I like these guys. I had never, of course, I don't watch a whole lot of Sky News Australia necessarily, but I came across that clip and I couldn't help but bring it up. But yeah, so they make a couple of important points in that. Number one is that Trump hasn't actually started a war. If you can believe that. I thought that's what America does. We're kind of in the business of starting wars. Unbelievable. It's kind of like when I remember a remark by Edward Snowden. He was talking about some deception, and he said that the deception is perhaps only as great as when the Department of War changed their name to the Department of Defense. And yes, sadly, oftentimes it looks a whole lot more like a Department of War than a Department of Defense. Now, that doesn't mean you're an isolationist. That doesn't mean that we should not have gone into World War II. There is a time. There is a time to do that. But my goodness, we really think, I mean, look at what Libya is, a complete and total disaster. Iraq has been a disaster. Syria is a disaster. Afghanistan is a disaster. I mean, after, it doesn't work out. It doesn't work out, and it is not the worst. It is not worth the price of not only our sons and daughters, but the sons and daughters of others who are affected by the collateral damage and fallout of our involvement in these various wars across the world. So, and without it, so that is definitely one of the things. The other thing is that he actually deserves this. Trump actually deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. Remember when Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize? And he essentially, I mean, how do you accept a Nobel Peace Prize when you did nothing but get elected? What, so now every president that gets elected deserves the Nobel Peace Prize? He should have said, no, I'm not going to take it. Let me earn this. Let me earn this award. How can he have that sitting on his wall and take any kind of pleasure or pride in it when it was just simply just the sycophancy and the worship of Obama by the Nobel Prize nomination team? I mean, it's insane. Why? Because he's half black, half white. He deserves the Nobel Peace Prize? No, I don't think so. So that is great news. And speaking of Middle East peace, this is per the AP, Israel and the UAE to sign deal at White House next week. Israel and the United Arab Emirates will sign their historic deal, normalizing relations at a White House ceremony on September 15th, officials said Tuesday. Senior delegations from the two countries will be led by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Emirati Foreign Minister Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed Al Nahyan, gotta love those long Arab names, the brother of Abu Dhabi's powerful crown prince. U.S. officials, who were not authorized to discuss the matter publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity, said the ceremony would either be on the South Lawn, the Rose Garden, or inside, depending on weather, and talk about tens of millions of dollars of free campaign advertising. Late Tuesday, Netanyahu tweeted he, quote, was proud to leave for Washington next week at the invitation of President Trump and to participate in the historic ceremony at the White House to sign the deal with the UAE. The UAE state-run WAM news agency acknowledged Sheikh Abdullah would lead the Emirati delegation to the signing. Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the UAE's day-to-day ruler, named in the joint announcement of the U.S. brokered deal, apparently will not attend. You got to love the America haters we elect into our very own Congress. Imagine this. Imagine a people so confused at times. We nominate people. We elect people to represent us. And perhaps the most powerful, not perhaps, and what is the most powerful legislative body in the world, who hate the very country that they were elected to. This is from Breitbart. Representative Ilhan Omar released a video Sunday that described more than 3 months of riots as an, quote, uprising over centuries of racial neglect and oppression. Yes, folks, that's how she described the riots, the looting, the burning, the destruction. An uprising. Uprising. Where have I heard that word before? Maybe I'll think of it. Maybe I'll think of it as we go through this story. Maybe I'll think of where I've heard that word, uprising. Gosh, it sounds so familiar. Okay, hold on. So that's what these are. They're uprising over centuries of racial neglect and oppression. Quote, as we speak, we are in the midst of an ongoing uprising over centuries of racial neglect and oppression. We can't talk about the protests in Minneapolis or Kenosha without first looking inward, she continued. We maintain a system that binds millions to desperate poverty, a system that doesn't provide the most basic necessities like food, shelter, and medicine. Whether they are brutalized by police, by austerity economics, or by politicians who simply do not care about us, our nation is crying out desperately for change. We need to fundamentally change the way our society treats its most vulnerable because this has gone on long enough. Wow. So let me get this straight. As Nolte in his Breitbart story points out, there's so much racial oppression and neglect in America that a Muslim immigrant from Somalia can be elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in a Midwestern state called Minnesota. There's so much oppression, so much neglect. I'm telling you, people of color, women, cannot get ahead. They just simply can't. Yeah, okay, they can be elected to Congress. Okay, they can become billionaires in the 1980s and 90s by hosting a daytime TV show that then becomes their own full-blown television network. Okay, yeah, okay, they can become Secretary of State of the United States. They can become CEOs of companies. They can even become First Lady of the United States. Oh, but there's just so, I mean, there really is. They can't get ahead. They can't. I mean, yeah, okay, they can become senators too. But I'm telling you, there's just so much. There's so much neglect that they just can't. Oh, but you are ahead. You are one of the most powerful people in the world as a member of the United States Congress. But you are ahead. You're doing pretty great. Your suicide squad, the America-hating suicide squad, doing pretty great. Best-selling author. I actually saw her book in Barnes & Noble the other day. I'd say she's doing pretty well. The reality is that these leftist elites who have been wildly successful, I guess they just hate their success so much that they try to convince other people of color, men and women, that they just can't get ahead. They just can't move beyond. The system just has you in place. It makes you wonder if they want them to stay down, if they want them to be oppressed, if they want them to continue. Rather than Ilhan, see, here's the thing. Ilhan Omar could have done a video, and she could have come on, and she could have said, look, I'm a Somali immigrant. I even experience discrimination from time to time. I'm a Muslim. I'm an incredible minority here in the U.S. But you know what? But you know what? It is truly incredible that someone such as myself can break through all of that and become a member of the highest legislative body in the land. Don't think for a second that you can't be successful in this country too. I am living proof. Reminds me of what Morgan Freeman told Don Lemon. Talking about how blacks can't get ahead, and Morgan Freeman's like, look at us! Dude, open your freaking eyes! I'm a little fired up this morning. Oh yeah, but that word uprising, where? Oh, wait. What does that mean? In Arabic, what is the word for that in Arabic? Wait. Ah, it's coming to me. Oh, intifada. Now, what are intifadas? Intifadas are uprisings that Palestinians and other Arab terrorists have been committing for a long time in their long war against the Jews. If you follow CGMRadio.com, then you'll see at times I'll put a link to a story, and next to that I'll call, I'll say American Taliban. Why? Because what have we seen? I actually shared a story yesterday, a picture of the Kenosha riots from Creative Destruction Media, who actually was doing such a good job, they got banned by Twitter, by Creative Destruction Media, with a picture of a guy, of a Black Lives Matter guy, dressed. He had the hat of a medieval Islamic warrior and a sword. He was carrying a scimitar, an Islamic sword, through the streets of Kenosha. You have others that say, if you kill one of ours, we will kill one of yours. Protesters that are the rioters, BLM rioters, chanting death to America. And now you have Ilhan Omar wrapping it all up, calling all of these things an uprising, which is the same word for intifada that the Arabs use against, that the Arabs do against mainly the Jews. So perhaps this is code for her saying, you know what, you guys, you Palestinian terrorists, Gazan terrorists, Hezbollah terrorists, whatever, you guys take care of Israel, don't worry. We're over here taking care of America. It looks as if she is the head of the American Taliban. And that is certainly something. She not only must be voted out, but she must be fully investigated for immigration fraud. She should not even be an American citizen from what it looks like. And no, I'm not saying that because she's a Muslim American woman. I'm saying that she married because she married her brother in order to commit immigration fraud. It's disgusting. It's sick. And this is so obvious. I hope the Justice Department is investigating this. They need to be. You know, if we can't take care of it on election day, but even if she is voted out, she still needs to be investigated and deported back to Somalia. Look, if America is so racist, America is so evil that a woman, Muslim, immigrant from Africa can become a member of Congress, why doesn't she go back to Somalia? Why did she immigrate here? If America is so terrible, so awful, why did she immigrate here? And then when she became an adult, she stayed. Okay, maybe she didn't have a choice as a child because that's what her family did, whose dad was like a high up serviceman in the brutal Somalian government. He was like a colonel or something like that. Why didn't she just go back when she became an adult? She very well could have, but she did not. And if she hates our country so much, why don't you go back to the bastion of beauty? It's mostly black over there in Somalia, and you don't have to be infected by whiteness. You don't have to be infected by people of lesser skin color than yourself, light brown, dark brown. I'm sorry, people of European descent were so abhorrent to her. As a Christian, I should and I do pray for her from time to time. And I'm going to continue to do so.
A Pakistani court has sentenced a Christian man to death on blasphemy charges. 37-year-old Asif Pervez was arrested in 2013 for allegedly saying negative things about the Muslim prophet Muhammad. A court in Lahore found Pervez guilty, a charge which carries a mandatory death penalty in the predominantly Islamic nation. His lawyer is planning to appeal Tuesday's ruling. Our senior international correspondent, George Thomas, joins me for more on this story. And George, tell us the circumstances that led to Pervez's initial arrest and sentence.
Yeah, as you described in your lead into the story, back in 2013, Asif, he worked in a garment shop, and basically he had the situation with his boss. boss, who was a Muslim. And according to the court documents, the Muslim boss was trying to get Asif to convert to Islam. And Asif pushed back, saying, no, I'm a Christian. These are my beliefs. And they went back and forth. And according to the Muslim boss, Asif proceeded to say negative things against Islam, against the Quran, against the Prophet Muhammad. And then he lodged a complaint on October 3rd, 2013, basically accusing Asif that he had blasphemed the Prophet Muhammad. And in the process, authorities in Lahore arrested Asif, and he has been in prison since 2013. And just this week, a court in Lahore said that he is charged. He did. He is guilty of committing, going against Islam's blasphemy laws, and that he must be hung.
And I'm assuming he's denying.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, his lawyer is saying they're going to appeal.
George, what exactly are Pakistan's blasphemy laws?
Yeah, so basically back in 1947, when India and Pakistan separated, in essence, they adopted these laws, strict Islamic laws that are based on Sharia law, very strict Islamic, very rigid laws. And it basically says anybody who interrupts a religious service taking place can be arrested. Anybody who goes into a Muslim gravesite and defiles a gravesite belonging to a Muslim can be arrested. Anybody who says something against the Prophet Muhammad, who desecrates any religious objects like the Quran or a mosque, can be arrested.
Pray for Asif. That video is linked at cgmradio.com, so be sure to check that out. Athletes Union wants Iran expelled from sport if wrestler executed. From Reuters, a global union representing 85,000 athletes called on Tuesday for Iran's expulsion from world sport if it executes champion wrestler Navid Afkari, whose case has stirred outcry. The 27-year-old Greco-Roman wrestler faces two death sentences after being convicted of stabbing a water security guard to death and other charges relating to anti-government protests in 2018, according to state media. Quote, the horrific act of executing an athlete can only be regarded as a repudiation of the humanitarian values that underpin sport, said World Players Association director Brendan Schwab in a statement. Quote, it must result in Iran forfeiting its right to be a part of sport's universal community. Afkari has said he was tortured into making a false claim, according to his family and activists, and his attorneys say there is no proof of his guilt. Keep Navid Afkari in your prayers as well. And remember, pray God's kingdom comes to Iran. I'm telling you, God is on the move. Look what's happening in the Middle East. Do not put anything past God. Is anything too difficult for God? No. And I think these past few years, what we've seen in this past month, have seen that that is not the case. Afghanistan, roadside bomb attack misses Afghan vice president, but kills 10. This is also Reuters. A roadside bomb in Kabul targeted first Afghan vice president Amrullah Saleh on Wednesday morning, but he escaped unharmed, his spokesman said. The attack killed at least 10 people. The Taliban denied involvement in the attack, which comes just ahead of long-awaited peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban in Qatar's capital, Doha. Quote, today, once again, the enemy of Afghanistan tried to harm Saleh, but they failed in their evil aim, and Saleh escaped the attack unharmed. Razwan Murad, a spokesman for Saleh's office, wrote on Facebook. He told Reuters the bomb targeted Saleh's convoy and some of his bodyguards were injured. Iraq, U.S. to withdraw over 2,000 troops from Iraq. Remember when the left was against the military-industrial complex? Remember when the left were screaming and ranting and raving at George W. Bush for sending troops all over the world? Remember Cindy Sheehan, the anti-war mom? Remember that? Gosh, it doesn't seem that long ago that the left was the anti-war party. how things have changed. I don't understand it, other than the fact perhaps it was just a facade. And there are many on the left and right who perhaps claim to be anti-war, but really are not. I don't know. But this should be seen as good news. Remember, Barack Obama won an election in part because he pulled the troops out of Iraq right before the election, which was a disaster because it ended in ISIS. I don't think we should have been there in the first place. But if we were there, then we need to pull out responsibly. It created a humanitarian disaster, pulling out the way we did before any government could be established. Anyway, quote, we are continuing to expand our partner capacity programs that enable Iraqi forces and allow us to reduce our footprint in Iraq, Marine General Frank McKenzie, the head of U.S. Central Command, said during a visit to Iraq. The drawdown will take the number of American forces to 3,000. A senior administration official told reporters on Air Force One late Tuesday that there would be an announcement regarding further troop withdrawals from Iraq as well. Alleluia. And more good news on that front. The official also said there would be an announcement concerning Afghanistan in the coming days. Sudan, check this out. Sudan, that has been a place of just unbelievable persecution of Christians. I'm telling you, don't put anything past God. On Thursday, September 3rd, Abdallah Hamdok, Prime Minister of the Republic of Sudan, and General Abdelaziz Adam Al-Hilu, Chairman and Commander-in-Chief of the Sudan's People's Liberation Movement, Army North, made an unexpected move to advance religious freedom in Sudan. Yes, folks, you heard that right. Religious freedom in Sudan. They signed an agreement guaranteeing rights that until recently, most Sudanese could only dream of attaining. All right, so they signed this declaration of principles that include, number one, recognition and accommodation for Sudan's racial, ethnic, religious, and cultural diversity. Two, complete political and social equality of all people guaranteed by law. Come on. Wow. Three, a democratic state with separation of religion and state, alternatively, the right to self-determination. Number four, self-protection until separation of religion and state is actualized for the Nuba Mountains and Blue Nile State. Five, cessation of hostilities on both sides. Six, appropriate and fair sharing of power and wealth among all the peoples of Sudan included in the Constitution. This joint agreement for separation of religion and state is the most significant advance for religious freedom to date in the new post-Bashir Sudan. Now, who's this guy? There have been a series of incremental changes in Sudan since the first big one. That would be, of course, the big change being when the former president, dictator Omar al-Bashir, was ousted on April 11, 2019, after 30 years of ruling. All those changes have been steps in the right direction, but none was as history-making as the one ironed out by the prime minister and the general in this September. Surprise, it's a great move forward. We'll see if it actually happens, but Sudan is something that's been in the back of my mind. I know it's been very tough for the Christian population in Sudan, so I look forward to updating you guys from time to time about how that has been going. And to end off, hitting the headlines, Davidic dynasty symbol found in Jerusalem, once-in-a-lifetime discovery. A once-in-a-lifetime find is how the, quote, how the city of David described three immaculately preserved 2,700-year-old decorated columns or capitals from the first temple period that indicate a connection to the Davidic dynasty. Archaeologists from the city of David did not expect to find anything this special when they began digging near what is now the Arman Hanatziv Promenade. Quote, I'm still excited, said Yaakov Billing, an archaeologist with the City of David who began exploring the area about 30 years ago. He was working at the site when the sound of a spade scraping a stone slab surprised him. After a careful excavation, archaeologists at the site uncovered the capital, whose style is found in royal and official buildings in the kingdoms of Israel and Judea during the First Temple period. Quote, I thought, Yaakov, maybe you've been in the sun too long. You know, you've been eating too much hummus or something. I don't know. But I looked again, and it was still there, Billing told the Jerusalem Post. So pretty cool. You can read more about that. That's from the Jerusalem Post, and it's, of course, linked at cgmradio.com. All right, let's dive into how Trump can enforce the snapback of UN sanctions on Iran. It was something I hadn't thought of before, because I have been wondering, how is the U.S. going to do this when everyone in the Security Council does not want the snapback of sanctions? Apparently, the smart dudes in the Trump administration know a wee bit more than I do. This is from Richard Goldberg, Washington Examiner. President Trump recently demanded indefinite restoration of the UN sanctions on Iran that were terminated by the Obama-Biden nuclear deal. Now, what are these sanctions put on Iran? We'll get into that, but including an arms embargo that was scheduled to expire in October. Russia and China will contest Trump's assertion and threaten sales and advanced conventional weapons to the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism, of course, because Russia and China. Russia is still the evil empire, and China has joined them. They jumped in the deep end with Iran as well. To defend America's security, Trump should use his own sanctions toolbox. Sanctions, of course. Why did I not think of that? Trump should use his own sanctions toolbox to enforce disputed multilateral restrictions, whether Moscow and Beijing like it or not. Okay, now we get into a little bit of summary. Remember what happened last month. Secretary of State Pompeo notified the UN Security Council that Washington, so on August 20th or so, around there, Washington was triggering a 30-day process known as a snapback to restore international sanctions on Iran, a move that effectively delivers last rights to the nuclear deal and denies Iran its remaining strategic benefits. So when we have the power to bring all the sanctions pre the Iran nuclear deal, JCPOA, whatever you want to call it, bring all of those sanctions back on Iran. Now, what were some of the things that Iran won through the 2015 nuclear deal? They won billions of dollars in sanctions relief. Iran had won expiration on the arms embargo in 2020. That's coming up next month. An expiration on the prohibition of foreign support to its missile program in 2023. Removal of prohibitions on uranium enrichment and missile testing, and future legitimate pathways to an industrial-sized nuclear program. And under the snapback, ladies and gentlemen, all of those concessions disappear. Older Security Council resolutions return to life, eliminating sunsets on key restrictions while demanding that Iran immediately halt all enrichment and missile-related activities. I have been saying on this show since I began it that I believe eventually the Iranian regime, the totalitarians in Tehran, it's going to fall. I believe it. And Iran will come back better than ever. Now, I understand this is the Middle East, and just because one dictator leaves doesn't mean another one will come back, but I believe God is at work, and I believe the Iranian people do not want this disaster. They've proven it by their resistance to it. And I'm telling you, you just never know. God is in charge and in the theater of the world. Look, what does the scripture say? Stand back and watch the salvation of our God. God's kingdom's coming to Iran. All right, so all of those things come back to life. Russia, China, and European countries that support the nuclear deal are contesting the U.S. snapback, arguing that America forfeited its standing to trigger the mechanism when it left the deal in 2018. Russia and China's interests are apparent. The Defense Department reported that both countries want to sell fighter jets, tanks, and naval platforms to Iran when the arms embargo ends. So the Axis of Evil wants to be able to play economically, and the snapback of all those sanctions do not help that out too much. Supporters of the nuclear deal in London, at two, Europe. In London, Paris, and Berlin, on the other hand, know that a snapback is their last stand. If the snapback occurs, the deal is finally dead. They are willing to undermine their own security interests in letting the arms embargo on Iran expire just to preserve a more politically expedient appeasement foreign policy, according to senior advisors. Former Vice President Joe Biden falls into this camp, too. Detractors claim that the refusal of most Security Council members to recognize America's triggering of the snapback leaves the U.S. more isolated, ignoring widespread support from across the Middle East. These claims dismiss a more fundamental truth. It is amazing what they'll come up with to try to keep a disaster alive and to prop up the worst state sponsor of terror in the world. Those claims dismiss a more fundamental truth. Doing nothing would give Iran uncontested international legitimacy in developing its conventional, missile, and nuclear capabilities. By triggering the snapback, Trump puts a cloud of uncertainty and illegitimacy over any UN member state that considers breaching binding Security Council resolutions. A cloud he can turn into a thunderstorm of deterrence by enforcing the snapback with the threat of U.S. sanctions. And then the article goes into here the different sanctions that they can do and all the different strategy on that. I'm not going to get into the weeds too much, but I'm telling you, this article is linked up at cgmradio.com. It's really amazing that they can do these secondary sanctions on Russia, on China, and even state-owned businesses can be affected by secondary sanctions. And they actually give an example here of a firm like, this is a mouthful, Rosoboron Export, Russia's state organization in charge of defense exports, a designation under an executive order bringing sanctions on all these countries could disrupt billions of dollars in global sales. China selling military products. Let's see. Recent examples demonstrate that state-owned enterprises with global business behave just like other multinational corporations when it comes to U.S. sanctions compliance. China has gone to great lengths to distance its state-owned energy companies and banks from illicit oil transactions with Iran. Last November, a Russian state-owned nuclear fuel company suspended its work at an Iranian facility after U.S. sanctions were reinstated. Russia and Chinese diplomats can make all the speeches they want. Their state-owned enterprises, nonetheless, typically make financially prudent decisions. I mean, when you're dealing with billions of dollars, I'm sorry, money talks. You can do business with Iran, or you can do business with us. And when you're talking about billions of dollars, I'm sorry, but you're going to be bringing representatives from these awful countries to the table. So he says here, Trump is actually scheduled to address the UN General Assembly just hours after the U.S. completes the snapback. So I guess September 20th was what we talked about last week, was the date. So we're going to be covering that, believe me. He should use the speech to announce an executive order threatening the full range of financial sanctions against any firm connected to the transfer of conventional arms, ballistic and cruise missiles, drones, and related components to Iran. though not covered by the UN embargo, transfers of air defense systems like the Russian S-400 should be included. So he's going to address the General Assembly right after, just literally hours after the snapbacks go into place September 20th. And so he needs to announce an executive order, full sanctions on any and all companies that do military business, essentially, that do military business with Iran. You will not be able to do business with the United States. And if you do, it's over. You are losing billions of dollars. He's not just making America great again, folks. He's making the world great again. And to end off, speaking of a man who made the world great again, well, one of my favorite speeches that I've heard from Ronald Reagan is his A Time for Choosing speech. I've played several minutes of it here in the past. I encourage you to look it up and watch it when you get a chance. But with what we've seen going on with Lebanon the past several years, with the Beirut port explosion, with the protesting, with the rolling blackouts, the economic disaster that Lebanon has found itself in, with Hezbollah as perhaps the strongest, a terrorist group, perhaps the strongest political party in Lebanon, it has been heartbreaking to watch what's been going on there. But I was actually looking. I'm working on a piece right now that I hope to be able to. It will be published at cgmradio.com, perhaps at another place as well, and we'll also record it, video and audio. And I'm using Reagan's A Time for Choosing speech in my research, and I came across this quote in the speech from Ronald Reagan. It really, really is incredible. And a link to the speech will be up at cgmradio.com as well. And here it is. This is October 27th, 1964. He's speaking as a Barry Goldwater surrogate on national television. And he pivots to Lebanon. And it's because it has to do with the economic policy. It was an example of good versus bad economic policy. And here's what he said. Some time ago, okay, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do a Reagan impersonation, maybe one day. Some time ago, Dr. Howard Kirshner was speaking to the Prime Minister of Lebanon. The Prime Minister told him proudly that his little country balanced its budget each year. Wow, can you believe that? It had no public debt, no inflation, a modest tax rate, and had increased its gold holdings from 70 to $120 million. When he finished, Dr. Kirshner said, "Mr. Prime Minister, my country hasn't balanced its budget 28 out of the last 40 years. My country's debt is greater than the combined debt of all the nations of the world. We have inflation, we have a tax rate that takes from the private sector a percentage of income greater than any civilized nation has ever taken and survived. We have lost gold at such a rate that the solvency of our currency is in danger. Do you think that my country should continue to give your country millions of dollars each year?" The Prime Minister smiled and said, "No, but if you are foolish enough to do it, we are going to keep on taking the money." Ronald Reagan, A Time for Choosing, October 27th, 1964. I will let you take from that what you will. And that will do it for this week's edition of World News Brief by CGM Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. If you like the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on whatever app you listen in on. And make sure to subscribe as well. Tell all your friends, tell at least 800 of your friends to subscribe. Also, email me, world@cgmradio.com. Questions, comments, news tips, prayer requests, anything else. I would love to interact with you personally there. And be sure to visit cgmradio.com for links to all of the articles and videos discussed in this show, as well as the other incredible shows right here on the CGM Radio Network. Have a phenomenal weekend, and may his kingdom come, and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven.